This is a really important thing. And I told you on Monday we were going to get into all the biggest stories from the past couple of weeks. I don't know that Greenland was really in the news today, but it's been back in the news in the past couple of weeks. And it's been talked about, especially since Trump got back into office, that this administration is seriously looking at a way to acquire Greenland, either by purchasing it, through negotiation, through military force. And finally, today, there was an announcement, this is from Fox News Digital, that the State Department is preparing a package to purchase Greenland from Denmark for $700 billion. That is the latest. And this is a story from Fox. It says, quote, President Trump's push for the U.S. to acquire Greenland could carry an estimated price tag of $700 billion. The estimate reported by NBC News was said to have been calculated by scholars and former U.S. officials involved in early planning discussions surrounding Trump's interest in acquiring the island as a strategic buffer in the Arctic against adversaries such as Russia and China. Trump wrote on Wednesday, quote, "The United States needs Greenland for the purpose of national security. If the United States doesn't act, Russia or China will." He added that anything less than U.S. control of Greenland is unacceptable and argued that the Arctic territory is vital to American defense interests, including the Golden Dome missile defense system in development. Trump's renewed push has increased tensions with Denmark and other NATO allies. Troops from several European countries deployed to Greenland on Thursday for a two-day mission aimed at boosting the territory's defenses. France, Germany, Sweden, and Norway are participating in the exercise, according to Fox News, with leaders saying the mission is intended to demonstrate NATO's ability to deploy military assets into the Arctic quickly. Greenland is the world's largest island and has a population of roughly 56,000 people, with most living along its ice-free coastline. About 80% of the territory is covered by ice caps and glaciers. So, of course, this has been a discussion for years. Ever since Trump's first term, there has been this ambition for the United States to, in some way, acquire the Greenland, the Greenland territory. And I know that for a lot of people, this sounds completely random. Most people don't think about Greenland, don't know anything about Greenland, don't know where it is, whose jurisdiction it's under. And so for a lot of people, this is like completely random, completely out of the box. And if you have paid attention, there has been much discussion. At this point, I think it's almost trite about the benefits. So for those that don't know, Greenland is situated in the Arctic Circle, in the northern Atlantic or in the Arctic Ocean, and it is technically under the control of Denmark. It is self-governing, but it's under the jurisdiction of the Kingdom of Denmark, and it's been this way for a long time that they've had a relationship with the Danish government. Trump is interested in either buying it, conquering it, and much has been said about the benefits of this, and we could talk about some of them. First and foremost, people talk about the mineral wealth of Greenland. Greenland has a lot of uranium in the country, or in the territory, I should say, which might be important for future nuclear energy, nuclear weapons. And like with all critical minerals and raw materials, it's a zero-sum game. If we don't have it, then another country will. China has expressed interest in mining the raw materials in Greenland. And so if we don't have them, then China will get them. China will get the uranium. Greenland is also rich in rare earth minerals, which China has a near monopoly on sourcing those and processing those. So people say if we acquire Greenland, we get the uranium and we get the rare earth minerals, which we need for iPhones and for other technology. And that will help us circumvent China's monopoly on some of those critical minerals. Bigger than that, people say, is that in the future, the Arctic is going to become an area of strategic competition. As it stands right now, the North Pole and the Arctic is mostly covered by thick sheets of ice, and this makes it impassable by normal commercial vessels or military vessels. And so as such, there is not a lot of commercial or military activity happening there. If you want to send a cargo ship through the Arctic, you need an icebreaker to go through it. And Russia has more icebreakers than anybody. Other countries have very few or none. And most countries don't build them at all. So for the past century, there's not a lot of activity happening in the Arctic. This is not an area of strategic importance for that reason. In the future, however, it is anticipated that due to climate change, whatever you believe, if it's anthropogenic climate change or if it's natural climate change, it is anticipated that in the future, as the polar ice sheet shrinks, then this area is going to open up. And the Arctic Ocean, like all the other oceans, is going to become a place where there will be significant commercial activity. And so there will be commercial vessels sailing on Russia's north coast. They call this the Northern Sea Route. And so vessels will be moving goods in and out of Siberia in northern Russia to China, to Europe. And this will circumvent the other sea route, which of course goes through the Suez Canal. There's also a major sea route across the Arctic. And then there's a major sea route on Canada's north coast. So this is anticipated to become, again, due to climate change, polar ice sheet melts, there's going to be a lot of commercial shipping there. And then, of course, that becomes an area of strategic competition as well. If you want to control the movement of goods and people, and what goes with that is military personnel and supplies, submarines, you're also going to need to have a military presence there as well to oversee the shipping lanes, to control key choke points. And so just like we talk about the Taiwanese Strait, just like we talk about the Panama Canal, the Suez, this is going to become another area where competition is going to start. And so they say, for the purpose of projecting American power in the Arctic, it's important to get as much territory there as possible. In particular, to oversee these shipping lanes, to control choke points where Russian submarines might move in these choke points between Greenland and Iceland, Iceland and the UK. And so it has to do with sea routes. Now, the other strategic importance, which has been talked about a lot, and maybe this is the biggest one, is how it pertains to missile defense. So for those that don't know, most of Russia's missile silos are around Finland. They're in the north of Russia. And if a Russian intercontinental ballistic missile were to launch at the United States, they're not going east, they're not going west, they're going north over the North Pole into the United States. And Trump explicitly talks about this. He says that we need Greenland for the Golden Dome. What is the Golden Dome? Well, it's obviously a reference to the Iron Dome. Iron Dome is an anti-missile system or an anti-rocket system. It's meant to shoot down projectiles and protect a particular geographic area. The difference, however, is that Iron Dome is meant to protect a very small area from very primitive rockets launched at short range. And so this has to do with a small area looking at a particular trajectory of shorter primitive munitions, like those fired by Hezbollah on Israel's border in northern Israel, southern Lebanon, and like Israel's border with Gaza in southwestern Israel. Golden Dome differs from this because this is a true anti-ballistic missile system. Golden Dome, unlike Iron Dome, is meant to cover a very large area, the entire continental United States. Iron Dome might protect a city from a small rocket. Golden Dome is meant to protect the continental United States from an intercontinental ballistic missile. So the territory is bigger, but also the type of projectile is different too. And how do they differ? A rocket has a very low arc. It goes up, it comes down, and it's pretty simple. It's about how you would imagine it to work. Intercontinental ballistic missile goes up into outer space and then comes down. Some of these hypersonic missiles so fast are undetectable. And so it's critical when you're intercepting an intercontinental ballistic missile, if it's even possible or reliable, is that you detect it where and when it launches. You get an early warning, and it's strategically located near where the missile is being launched. So if Russia is launching missiles at the United States, you want an anti-ballistic missile system forward deployed closer to where the missiles are being launched. And if you look at Greenland, it is right in the middle of where those missiles would have their trajectory in outer space. It's right in the middle. If you look at it from the top of the globe rather than looking at a normal globe or looking at the Mercator projection of a normal map. So they say the real strategic reason and putting the strategic in strategic defense, having to do with strategic weapons, which are nuclear weapons, they say we need Greenland to have early warning systems. We need Greenland to have anti-ballistic missile systems forward deployed against Russia so that we could detect an incoming ICBM. They say that's the reason. So these are kind of the big three reasons they say, and it's like with everything, there's always multiple reasons, multiple justifications given. Like with Venezuela, it's oil, it has to do with Cuba, it has to do with whether Iran, Russia, and China are involved. It has to do with a lot of things. Similarly, Greenland, you've got critical minerals and uranium, you've got these Arctic sea routes, which are going to become competitive, and then you've got missile defense. In my opinion, however, the biggest thing is that Greenland is just close to the United States. It's close to Canada. It's close to the United States. It's close to Iceland. It's close to the United Kingdom. And it is true that in the future, if the North Pole melts and it opens up to commercial and naval vessels, then this is going to become a very relevant piece of territory. And if we do not own it, if we do not have it, it is true that other countries will take it. They will try to take it, and they already are. China published a white paper in 2018 about this. China wants to get into the Arctic Council. Even Russia doesn't want this. There's an Arctic Council of all the nations that have claims in the Arctic. China applied for membership, and Russia even said, Arctic Council, you don't border the Arctic. You're 1,000 miles away from the Arctic. And China said, well, we're a near Arctic power, and we're going to become an Arctic power. So China wants to project power there. Russia wants to project power there. We are engaged, as I said on Monday, in a strategic competition with great power rivals. Whether we like it or not, that is the case. Russia and China. And in particular, we are engaged in a competition with them in this emerging theater of competition and conflict. If we do not take it, they will. They are interested in it. And it is in their interest to take it. China has already made overtures to Greenland, trying to invest in mines, airports, research stations. Why do you think that is? It's the same reason that China took an interest in South and Central America. It's the same reason that China built a space station in Argentina. It's the same reason that China is building deep water ports in Ecuador and Peru, in Jamaica. It's because this is an area where they could potentially threaten the United States. This is an area where they can gain intelligence on the United States. They could forward deploy military assets near the United States. They could disrupt U.S. commercial activities. It's for the same reason. China wants the territory. They want to build stuff there, which is dual use. So they can plant a flag, so they can start bringing their personnel, so that they could start bringing their people, so that they can make Greenland dependent on them, so that one day maybe they could build a military base there. And so this is where, when Trump says we have to have it, it's not enough that we have our troops there, it's not enough that we have access to it. There is no substitute for ownership. And here's why. If America puts its flag down and we say, this is now America, this is ours, this is our territory, then there's going to be no Chinese anything. There's going to be no Chinese research station. There's going to be no Chinese anything. And if we wanted them out, we could kick them out. And if they didn't listen, well, it's backed up by the U.S. military. No ifs, ands, or buts. The United States will defend its own clay. It will defend its own soil. Will defend its own people and personnel and infrastructure. So in the future, China has designs on Greenland. Russia has designs on it. They're getting pushy. They're being sneaky. They're writing up plans about it. If it's in Danish hands, well, who knows what's going to happen? Maybe the next president is out to lunch. Maybe in the future, that NATO Article 5 commitment, maybe it's a little bit less ironclad. Who knows what could happen? China might test. They might test that. Is this a real tripwire? Can we intervene here? And will it trigger U.S. intervention? Is the U.S. going to go to war for a Danish protectorate or something, a Danish vassal, a self-governing member of the Danish kingdom? They might test it. They will test it. And if they will test it and contest it, then they might eventually have it. And that is unacceptable. It is unacceptable for China or Russia to have that piece of territory and be right in the middle of effectively the Atlantic, right in between the United States and the United Kingdom, right on the doorstep of Canada and North America. And so what happens in the future when you have Chinese amphibious assault vehicles and Chinese tanks and Chinese drones and Chinese containerized weapon systems, and they go north through Siberia, out the port, they go across the Arctic, and they bring them to Greenland. And now they're right there again. This is diminishing the distance between the United States and our strategic rivals. So there's no substitute for ownership. And what I would liken this to is Alaska, Hawaii, Cuba, for that matter, Puerto Rico. Could you imagine if there was a scenario where the United States did not control Hawaii, Guam, did not have a military presence in Japan, in the Philippines, in these other countries? We would lose control over the Pacific. China would have broken out already. They would control all that stuff by now. They would have intimidated all these countries. They would have military bases. They wouldn't need to build them in the South China Sea out of nothing. Could you imagine if Alaska was a Russian colony? During the Cold War, we never would have survived that. Could you imagine if Puerto Rico was a colony of some other country? And who knows, if that were invaded, if Cuba was truly under the subjugation of a foreign power, 90 miles from Florida, it's the same thing. And so acquiring Greenland right now seems like it's random or it's too ambitious or maybe it's unnecessary for us to actually have it. But that is just simply short-sighted. In 50 years, we will be engaged in a great power competition truly with China. They do have their eyes set. They have designs on these territories. They are trying to pierce the armor in our hemispheric defense, our fortress in the Western Hemisphere. And if we leave that to like Denmark, it's a country with no military. They're in NATO. Russia is testing NATO. Look at what Russia is doing in Europe, sending drones over every airport in Germany and Belgium and Denmark. In all these countries, they are testing that NATO Article 5 guarantee. They do it all the time. In some ways, that's what Ukraine is about and what this collective security agreement is about with Ukraine. China and Russia don't take Europe seriously. And if that's Danish clay, if that's Danish territory, they're not going to take that seriously. And all that is going to do is set the stage for a crisis down the line, literally no different than Ukraine. Ukraine is another one where it's sort of like an ambiguous guarantee. It was sort of understood in the Budapest Memorandum that we would protect Ukraine, but they're not a NATO member. But they have this sort of collective security understanding with the United States and the West. Russia contested that. They tested the tripwire. And we were forced to come in after. We were forced to try to rush to their defense, and it's not going to work. Russia's going to have it. And mark my words, the same will happen in Greenland. So they're technically part of Denmark, but they have self-rule. China's trying to buy their way in. The United States is temporarily pushing that off. Who knows what could happen down the line if the United States remains on top of that. If China gains a foothold and they try something, once again, we're caught on defense. So the thing about territory is it's like real estate. They're not making any more of it. There's only so much of it. And every country wants to control it, especially in our neighborhood. Our great power rivals want a slice of that. It is a zero-sum game. We want to control territory by them, to contain them, to prepare for a potential attack, to blockade them, choke them off, and the reverse is also true. A lot of people say this is a vanity project. Trump wants to grow the United States. He wants to leave his mark by gaining more territory like James Polk or like other presidents that have expanded the United States. And I think there's probably some truth to it. I don't mind at all. I think that is a healthy incentive. I think America should be getting bigger. We should have more territory. Bring them in and build a military base on top of it. It's in the Western Hemisphere. It's ours. So broadly speaking, I like the imperial ambitions of the United States. The Western Hemisphere is our fortress. That is what we need to defend ourselves. People don't realize we are in danger. We are constantly in danger. Russia and China are testing the waters. They are pushing outward. They do have global ambitions. That is why China wants an Arctic Belt and Road Initiative. They want an Arctic Silk Road, just like they have in the Pacific, just like they have with Latin America, just like they have in the Indian Ocean. They want the same thing in the Arctic because they have global ambitions. And the way that we protect our survival and our economic defense interests is that we have to lock down the entire Western Hemisphere. So people wanted a leader. That was part of the appeal of Trump in 2016. When he came down the escalator, he said, we need a real leader. Not like a small L leader, like, oh, he's the leader of our country. No, we need like a capital L. We need a leader. We need a truly great leader. And what is a great leader other than a leader that takes territory? Other than a leader that gets victories? You know how you're winning? You have more territory than you started out with. That's how you know you're winning. So taking Venezuela, taking Greenland, taking the Panama Canal, taking Cuba. I support these things. Putting the American flag all over the map. I like it. I love that. That's good. That's good for us. And it's good for you. If you're a citizen with a U.S. passport, why would you be against your country getting bigger? If you are a citizen of the United States of America, if you are a U.S. passport holder, why would you oppose your country getting bigger, richer, getting more resources, more stuff, planting our flag in more places? You shouldn't. That's good for us. And what's good for us is good. That's what America First means. It means the survival and prosperity of the American people first. And by the way, as far as Greenland is concerned, it really begs the question. There are 55,000 people on this island. 55,000. Do people realize what a small number that is? There are 3 million people living in the city of Chicago. 55,000 in the largest island in the world. That's nothing. It's nothing. They don't have a military. They don't have industry. They survive off of like fishing. Okay? These are like fishing villages in the Arctic, and there's no people, and there's no industry, and there's no military. And people say, well, it's technically Denmark's. Okay, who cares? And how big is Denmark? And what kind of military do they have? How many people live in Denmark? What kind of economy do they have? What kind of military do they have? And so what? They showed up a couple hundred years ago. Now it's theirs forever? No, I don't think so. Oh, and now we just have to let them have it. No, this giant island with all the uranium and all the rare earths sitting in this strategically important region, it belongs to the 20,000 Eskimos. No one can touch it. No one touch it. No one look at it. It's theirs. And technically, it's also Denmark's because, I don't know, they came there a little while ago. What are you talking about? Another bigger country is going to kick down the door. If it makes China more able to destroy us, China will destroy them. They will gobble it up. Are you stupid? If you are a giant island with fresh water, uranium, critical minerals, you're right next to the United States, and you got 50,000 people that cannot defend the island, do you think China is going to let that stand in the way of a platform to attack the United States? Of course not. If they could, they would take it in a heartbeat. They can, they have the capability. It's just that right now it might not be strategically viable because it's controlled by a NATO country. Maybe they don't want to challenge the United States. But of course, it is a matter of national security for China or Russia to have it. And they wouldn't take them a second to think about whether they would devour that territory. But we have to be the stupid people and think about national sovereignty and, well, it's technically Denmark's and, well, Denmark is going to let us. Denmark is going to let us. Try and fucking stop us. I love that. Well, Denmark lets us put our military there. Denmark lets us use Greenland for our military. I would like to see Denmark try and stop us. As a matter of fact, I would like to see all of Europe try to stop us. They let us use Greenland. They let us do whatever we want. Try and stop us from doing whatever we want. The difference is we spend $1 trillion per year on our military. The biggest other country in the European Union, in NATO, they spend $65 billion. That's the difference. I see all these idiot commentators in the UK, in Europe. They say, this is ridiculous. The United States doesn't need to have it. We already let them use it. Let us try and fucking stop us. It's the opposite. We let you have your countries. We let you exist. Who do you think was holding back the Soviet Union for 50 years, idiot? What do you think was standing in the way of 100,000 Soviet tanks, which would have never stopped in Germany, by the way, if it wasn't for us? What do you think was standing in between them and the whole rest of Europe for 50 years, preventing them from marching all the way from Berlin to Lisbon? What do you think was standing in the way of them and then mounting an amphibious assault in the UK? It was us. That was the United States of America, which maintained the second largest nuclear arsenal, which built a strategic air force, which has the burden of a military industrial complex. That was us. You let us use Greenland? No, we let you exist as Europe. You're welcome. You should be grateful that we don't take a whole lot more. We could take Greenland. We could take Copenhagen. We could take Portugal. We could take Spain. We could take all of it. Try. You think the United Kingdom could stop us? Try. Seriously, try. They can't stop Russia. They can't stop China. You think they could stop us? I'm getting really sick of this belligerence from the Europeans. I don't know who they think they are. They get together and say, well, we're demanding a collective security agreement for Ukraine. We already let the United States use Greenland. I don't know what they're on about. They need to have it. We need to have it because you can't defend it. Denmark does not have a military industrial complex. As far as we're concerned, they don't have a military. That's why we need to have it. We need to have it because we can defend it. You can't. And you can't defend it because you've spent all your money on welfare for Africans. That's the difference. You can't defend it because for the last 100 years, we spent all our money on bombs and planes and guns and tanks and aircraft carriers, and you spent it on free healthcare and free education so that you wouldn't have the burden. You're welcome. They say, why do you have to have it? Because you cannot defend it. Greenland can't defend themselves. Denmark can't defend Greenland. The whole European Union couldn't defend Greenland from China or from us. So they shouldn't have it. If it's a national security interest for us, then we must have it. Enough with these like exercises. We're going to pay obeisance to these like Western European countries with no military. Hey guys, could we buy this from you? What do you mean? It's totally crazy. And I think on some level, that is part of the frustration. It is that we pay for this giant military, we have suffered from social atomization, and we no longer get any of the benefits of any of it. Right? You and your parents and your grandparents have been paying for this giant military for our entire lives. And we don't have any of the benefits of it. We just get humiliated everywhere. We lose everywhere. We invade countries. It really doesn't even matter to us. It's not really, we do it on behalf of Israel. So we have this empire, but like none of the benefits of it. We don't have any of the decisive, tangible victories. We neglect our own neighborhood while fighting in Israel's neighborhood. And as it pertains to capitalism, we have this free market system, this international trade system, a fiat money system, and we're not even rich anymore. And we're not even rich. Nobody's even rich anymore. People have roommates. People are like 29 with roommates. They're building these like tiny homes where you have to climb a ladder to get to a loft. You have the shrinkflation at Chipotle and everywhere else. So the spirit of our nation has been killed. Like the vitality of our nation has been killed by empire and capitalism, but we don't even have the benefits. We're not rich and we're not powerful. So how do we reverse this? We need to give a life-affirming spirit to our country, and we need to enthusiastically embrace mercantilism, autarky, empire. Let's breathe some life into the country. Let's start taking some territory for ourselves. Let's make it work for us. Let's make ourselves rich and powerful again. Let's take Greenland. Let them worry about it. You want to protect Ukraine? You start spending some money on your military, pussy. Europe has been getting free healthcare and free pot and free education because we defend them. Now you want us to defend Ukraine on your behalf. You pay for your military. We're pulling up the drawbridge to Fortress America here. We take Greenland. So anyway, that's a truly America first mentality. And people need to get more in the spirit of that. That is what America is. People need to get comfortable that that is what America has always been. When has America ever stopped expanding? Question. You know, all these people want to talk about heritage Americans. I'm sorry, are we still 13 colonies? People talk about founding stock. Well, what happened after we founded the country? We just kept expanding. Always more. More, more territory, more war, more conquest, more settlements. And when we took the whole continental United States, we went into the oceans, more. Puerto Rico, Guam, Philippines, Cuba, Alaska, Hawaii. And then after World War II, we built a global empire. We built U.S. bases in Japan and Germany, everywhere in the world. This is what we always do. So people say, we need to get back to this time when America's a republic and, you know, we just hang out within our own borders. No, wrong. We need an imperial presidency for an American empire. We've been in one for a long time, but we don't call it that. We've done it for everybody else. It's been this altruistic empire. We need to become an empire that is America First. We need to start getting some of the benefits. So take Greenland. Take Greenland. You can buy it, fine, buy it. You don't want to upset the Europeans. I understand that. There's arguments behind that, which we could flesh out at another point. You know, buy it, do it through the in a way that's legitimizing, but acquire Greenland, acquire Canada, acquire Venezuela, acquire Cuba, acquire Colombia. And a lot of people disagree with this. They say this is a terrible idea. We want to add all these people to our country. We have to reimagine everything. What do you, and I said it at the top of the show kind of jokingly. I said, you know, on the show, I'm always talking about how America should expand. And people say, well, if you expand America, you're just throwing your borders around more brown people. And then they're going to vote for Democrats. Who said anything about letting them vote, giving them electoral representation? Nobody said that. Nobody said that at all. And we didn't even say necessarily we would formally annex them, but just take control over the situation. It's staggering how many people just negotiate against themselves. And this is why I do have some admiration for these autocrats in other countries, because they just go and do it. China is just building ships 400 times more tonnage than we are even capable of. They're just doing it. They want to contest the border with India. They just build whole new towns on the border with India. They send a bunch of people there. They build highways, bridges, airports. They build whole cities and nobody even lives in them. And you know, that's not like a good economic policy, but they just do it. They build islands in the middle of the South China Sea. It's totally illegal. They do it anyway. They just have this can-do mentality. And I wish we had that in America. Instead, we have this very small thinking. We got to get away from a petty, small version of American nationalism where it says like, hey, man, we just want to take over the government to leave everybody alone. We want to withdraw all our bases and, you know, we just want to close the borders and we just want to hang out and be chill. We need to embrace a larger perspective of what America First can be. And that means putting ourselves on a global scale. So I'm totally in favor of it. And that doesn't mean giving women the right to vote in Afghanistan. It means like take the minerals that we need. Like why would we be in a hostage situation over rare earths with China? Just go and invade the other countries that have them. You know, I'm not worried about building a democracy in Afghanistan so that women have the right to vote. I'm worried if we have the critical minerals that we need, the antimony and, you know, rare earths and bauxite and copper and lithium and uranium. And we want the things that we need. Those are the kinds of interventions that we need. We need territory to defend the Western Hemisphere. We need platforms to control international trade. We need to control the choke points. We need to have a reliable source of energy, not just fossil fuels, but everything else. Like, this is what we need to do. We need to win the race in the 21st century. So I love it. And I just love the spirit of it. I really am a huge believer. This is the last thing I'll say about it. I really am just a believer in the vibe. I see these edits on TikTok and Instagram. They play Around the World, that old song, that like electro pop, like Euro pop song from the 90s, Around the World. And it's a map of the US flag in America, Greenland, Cuba, Venezuela. And I'm like, this is changing the consciousness. It's surreal. This feels like the future is being brought forth. Because for so long, my entire life, you grow up in America and there's this suffocating sense of dread that the best times are behind us. Doesn't it feel like that? That the best times are not only behind us, but they're long gone. We are on the other side of the hill and all that is left for us is to see our country slowly die and deteriorate and then cease to exist. That is the consciousness that we grew up in. People say it's a late stage empire, late stage republic. All that is waiting for us is ruin. It's a slow, inexorable descent into extinction. And all the good stuff is behind us, and it's just over. And on top of that are these feelings of guilt and shame. This feeling that we are not capable of doing anything. We're weak. We lost. We were in control, and now we're not. We had all the power, and now we don't. It was our time, and now it isn't. Now it's someone else's turn. We are at the back of the line, and the future belongs to every other country. The future belongs to China. The future belongs to India. We used to have a rule of the roost, and now it's our turn to shut up, get put in our place, and listen to the UN. Like, that has been the feeling our whole lives as a society, as a civilization, and it weighs on us as individuals. Why would anyone dream big? Why would anyone have dreams, aspirations, if this is our country? What's the end game? Go and get some office job, see a movie, go on vacation, wait to be replaced by Indians and Hispanics and Chinese people and Muslims. And here we are in the 2020s, and you sort of raise your eyebrow. You go, oh, whoa, what's that over there? America's getting bigger? Colonialism isn't over. We can actually just do things. We can kidnap a dictator. We can take Greenland. America's growing again. There's a spirit of revival. There's a spirit of growth. There's a spirit of adventure. There's a sense of confidence, taking what we want, doing what is in our best interest. We can stick up for ourselves. Our survival and prosperity matters. We can fight for it like every other nation does. We're in the fight still. We're still in the game. I like that feeling. I like the idea. Yeah, Greenland. Didn't know about it. Now it's ours. Never heard of it. Know nothing about it. It's the latest U.S. territory that our strong and powerful and respected president just annexed. Maybe I'll go there sometime. I don't know, because I can. I like that. I like that idea. I like that feeling. And even if, again, I think Trump is very incompetent. I think that, you know, there's a lot of things he's not doing well. But I've always said that he really embodies, even if he is not the fulfillment of it, even if he is an imperfect instantiation, he embodies something powerful. He's tapping into something powerful. A strong leader, American revanchism, self-confidence on the world stage. It's not something I think that we have a lot of opportunities to get. You know, this doesn't come around a lot, and I think we're getting less of it all the time. So I do embrace it. There's something really remarkable, especially where we came from, because I think it's very important that I grew up in the Obama years. Like, my childhood was in the Obama years. And so as a very young boy, you grow up with the Iraq war being a disaster. We're in the recession. And the idea is that America is the bad guy. We're the evil empire. We're criminals. Our leaders lied us into a war. We're just a big, corrupt, stupid country. I think about that Jeff Daniels monologue from the newsroom. That was like, oh my gosh, that was like the viral clip of my childhood. That clip from Jeff Daniels in the newsroom where he says, when you say America's the number one country in the world, I don't know what you're talking about. The only thing America leads the world in is people in prison, military spending, and people that believe in angels. And many of the Jews on the left made us feel this way. They made us feel like John Stewart made us feel like dumb fuckistan. He made us feel like we're a big country of dumb Christians and corrupt politicians that went to war for oil, and we're the bad guys. We terrorize everybody. We're the real invaders. We are now the evil empire. And then Obama comes in with all these other smart-ass liberals, and they were telling our country, your time is over. America's not exceptional. America's not great. The Monroe Doctrine is over. We have to ask the UN. We're ready to bow to every other country. We're ready to bow to the president of Cuba. We're ready to bow to the whole world and just surrender everywhere. So compared to where we came from to where we are now, we have a president that's flipping people off and they call him daddy in Europe and he's pulling dictators out of bed and throwing them in jail. He wants to invade Greenland. I love it. I have to be honest with you. I love it. I don't like bombing Iran. I think that's a bad idea. And I don't think the mass deportations are happening enough. But the energy, the real last thing I'm going to say. So here's the trick. We have to get in the middle of these feelings. What do I mean by this? Trump is phase one. Trump breaks down the door, shatters the Overton window. He makes it possible. He is 1.0. He is the John the Baptist figure. He wakes everybody up, defeats the media, political correctness. But he does not complete the mission. He does not fulfill the aspirational promise of MAGA and America First. But he lights the fire. He sparks the embers. How do you get in the middle? The question is about succession. We're fighting for control of the narrative about Trump. And there's a few narratives. One, Trump is a sellout, a con man, a failure. He was always a con man. He was always a failure. He was compromised along the way. We throw his legacy in the garbage. It's nothing. That's one narrative. The other narrative in the middle. Well, you know, Trump is doing a really great job and we got to keep America great. We got to vote for J.D. Vance, his vice president. You know, Trump started it and we got to keep it going. Trump is the greatest president and we got to keep the winning coming. And we got to keep these moderate solutions going. Narrative number three. Trump has the right idea. America first, make America great again. Saying Merry Christmas again. These are powerful ideas. But they're ideas that cannot be fully realized in one presidential term, in one decade, by one man. He started the fight, but he was limited by the circumstances of his time. We're frustrated with the lack of progress. We're frustrated with how he was sabotaged, subverted, in some ways perhaps compromised. But we have to build upon his legacy. We have to take the torch, the true inheritors of America First, and deepen it, expand it, carry it forward. We have to get more radical, not less. We have to be right-wing progressives. We have to take it further than Trump did. Trump says, I want to deport the illegal gang members. I say, take away the naturalization of people that have no allegiance to the country. Trump says, we'll administer Venezuela, appoint a viceroy, take the oil, restrain Israel. Forget about bombing Iran, restrain Israel. Trump is going to cut down waste, fraud, and abuse in the federal government, eliminate entire departments, entire agencies, build new ones, build new systems, new agencies, new departments. Have to take it further, have to go harder. And the reason why the latter is the best is because if you go and tell everybody, hey, the last 10 years was all terrible, it's very demoralizing. It also puts you at odds with a lot of people that did fight and sacrifice for this very big and successful political movement. Whatever you want to say about it, Trump tapped into something, won these two huge elections with 60 million, 70 million voters. And there's a lot of people that are emotionally, professionally, personally invested in it. And to turn around and say, oh, it's all bad. It's all awful. It's all a mistake. It puts you at odds with those people. It makes it as though it were in vain. It's very demoralizing. And I also think it's just wrong. I don't think that everything Trump did was a mistake. I think that on net, Trump is good. Defeating political correctness, getting people to think of America first, changing the conversation on immigration. 10 years ago, nobody was talking about mass deportations. Nobody was even talking about like building a border wall. It just wasn't there. Now, that's where the new right-wing consensus is. build the wall, mass deportations, not good enough, restrict legal immigration. So I also just think it's wrong. On net, there's many good things about Trumpism. It's just that, like with any movement, it is subject to constraints, limitations, political realities. And so our job is to take the baton and carry it forward and really just be inspired by that energy. That is so much of the battle, is just waking up and believing that we can do the impossible. And that means dreaming. It's very important to dream big, dreaming of an American empire. It's important to imagine what we want. And what I don't want is like some wholesome Chungus republic. No, we're not living and fighting and dying so that you can work in a nail factory like your grandpap did and marry some, you know, Midwestern mid and have a couple of kids out on the, that's actually not aspirational. So many of these people, the heritage Americans, they say, you know, there's plenty of cheap property in like rural Indiana. And if you work at the nail factory that's polluting the river, you can buy a $100,000 two-bedroom shanty and find some gas station mid, or better yet, you could run a Subway franchise. And it's like, we want a Roman Empire in space. That gets people excited. This does not get, running a Subway franchise does not get people excited. So it's important to dream. It's important to think big. It's important to understand that, you know, we need people to really, the power of belief cannot be overstated here.